The Beat on the Street is CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, campus and community radio.
Diverse Dreams. Diverse Dreams series was produced with the support of Met Radio 1280 AM and CKUW 95.9 FM. Episode 2, The Cheapest Dreamers.
If para-athletes inspire society, how Canadian society inspires para-athletes? In the first episode, we talk a little how hard it is for those heroes to work with not much sponsors or financial support. Now, we're going to give you a look for this issue. Canada has been a proud host to various major international sports events, reflecting its commitment to the global sports community. The Summer Olympics landed in Montreal in 1976, while Calgary took center stage for the Winter Olympics in 1988. In 1976, Toronto hosted the Summer Paralympics, emphasizing inclusivity in sports. Canada welcomed the Pan American Games to Winnipeg in 1967, with another edition occurring in 1999, and once again in Toronto in 2015. The Winter Paralympics found a home in Innsbruck in 1988, co-hosted with Austria, and later in Vancouver in 2010. These events show Canada's enduring dedication to fostering athletic experience and international camaraderie.
Training-wise, two-thirds of high-performance athletes in Canada have personal coach. Olympic athletes spend an average of 20 hours per week training with their coaches, compared to only 14 hours among Paralympic athletes. And while Olympic competitors tend to spend more than 30 hours per week on the sport, Paralympic athletes can't do the same, due to time commitment with other income-generating jobs, aside from sports. Leon Stanley is one of the exceptions who can devote 100% of his time to the sports. Certainly one of the reasons why our athlete of T37 collected records running the 1500 meters and 5000 meters.
I do two gym sessions a week, three like running workouts per week. And then on top of that, I run on the days I'm not working out. So basically I run 6-7 days a week plus two gym sessions. And then two or three recovery sessions with that as well. So, well, I'm just an athlete right now. When I was younger, I was in school. I was doing some school online, doing some upgrading, doing that kind of stuff. And then I just kind of wanted to see how far I could go in track. So I decided to do it more full time.
Moving on to Canadian sports centers, athletes generally like the training experience, but there is a call for more financial support. The big question, are these support systems comprehensive enough?
Talking money, Canadian athletes earn around $28,858 annually, but monthly expenses are nearly $4,400. And about one in five athletes says to deal with financial barriers when it comes to global competitions and sport medicine services. Paralympic athletes deal more with financial barriers for competitions and gear, but less so for coaching services and housing compared to Olympic athletes. Also, Paralympians are making slightly more than average, earning $33,073, but their monthly expenses are also higher than average, $4,667. Given that employment income rises with age, and Paralympians are typically much older and have a higher incidence of being employed in activities other than their sport. They also receive a higher amount in AAP, which may be necessary by the fact that Olympic athletes have a sport-related income that includes professional athlete salary, endorsements, sponsorships, and appearance fees, prize money, that's much higher than that of Paralympic athletes. Only 20% of the athletes know about the availability of the extra training and competition allowance for Paralympic athletes with high support needs, up to $6,000 a year.
The Athlete Assistance Program, the AAP, boosts athletes' performance, but only half think it helps with post-secondary education. In December 2022, Canadian Heritage announced a significant commitment of $2.4 million in crisis funding to address mental health concerns among Olympic and Paralympic athletes. The funding will support crisis care, education, and training for athletes and coaches, with a specific focus on providing access to mental health care professionals at the training and competition sites. The funding will be administered through Canadian Olympic Committee's wellness program, Game Plan. It is not surprising that athletes with a national team are more likely to have used Game Plan. Olympic athletes are also more likely to have used the service compared with Paralympic athletes.
A quick note from the report. Paralympic athletes are less positive than Olympic athletes regarding the adequacy of the type and amount of competition they are getting. They are more positive, however, than other athletes when it comes to sports science and medicine services they receive during competitions.
In a strategic move, Heritage Canada has set ambitious goals for Canada's Paralympic Ranking Index. They are aiming for the 14th spot in summer sports and an even more challenging 60th place in winter sport. The interesting part? They are in both achievements by March 2024, months before the Paris 2024 Games, which starts in late August. It's a tight timeline, especially considering the winter parasport won't happen until March 2026. Breaking down the numbers in Canadian sports funding, it seems there is a budgetary strategy that's raising eyebrows. Can you explain, Eva?
You're right, Thiago. The allocated budget for sports in 2023-24 is $264,497,322. But hold on! It drops significantly to $237,180,444 in the year of the Paris 2024 Games.
That's an interesting move, Eva. One might question the logic of planning less spending during such a pivotal year for sports.
Especially when you consider the following year, 2025-26, maintains a lower budget at $233,447,336. It's certainly a unique financial strategy in the realm of sports funding.
Centralizing policy making and management for creativity, arts, and culture, plus heritage and celebration, plus sport, plus diversity and inclusion, plus official language under Heritage Canada, prompts concerns about the ability of each sector to receive dedicated attention and resources. The International Paralympic Committee, or IPC, emphasizes that classification is the cornerstone of the Paralympic movement. It's what determines which athletes are eligible to compete and how they are grouped for fair competition. In other words, you don't become classified, you won't go to the next Olympic Games.
Right. And Paralympians are grouped based on the degree of activity limitation resulting from their impairment. The key here is ensuring that the impact of the impairment on an athlete's performance is minimized, showcasing their true athletic prowess. Obviously, many times this requires more equipment and more money coming from athletes' wallets.
The IPC athletes' evaluation process is at the heart of this. It seeks to answer three critical questions. First, does the athlete have a permanent eligible impairment?
To answer that, athletes undergo assessments by the governing bodies of their respective sports, considering 10 different impairment types. These include physical, visual, and intellectual impairments. It's all about finding that underlying health condition leading to a permanent eligible impairment. Jesse Zissou was born with cerebral palsy after having a stroke at birth. He has 75% function on his right side compared to his left side. He eventually learned that his condition could bring him to professional sports as a para-athlete, and his results qualified him for the 2016 Paralympic Games in Rio.
Like, I was just doing some social media, like, work and, like, for CP Ontario, and they would ask me, what sports did you do in high school and stuff like that? And I answered just the different sports, football, basketball, yada, 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 track. And they asked me, was it against able-bodied people or para people? And I said able-bodied because I didn't know what that meant. Like, that doesn't register to me. And I knew that I had a disability at the time.
How many potential para-athletes could Canada have? The next step is figuring out if the athlete meets the minimum impairment criteria of the specific sport. This includes factors like height of amputation levels, rooted in scientific research.
And finally, the last piece of the puzzle, assigning the athlete to a sports class. This is where it gets interesting. While some sports have just one class, others like running and jumping events can have up to 20. All that requires structure, coaches, and, of course, athletes.
These class group athletes with similar athletic limitations allowing for fair competition. And here's an interesting twist. Athletes in the same class might not have the same eligible impairment. It's about grouping based on similar activity limitations. It's like a meticulous matchmaking process for fair play. And remember, because impairments can change over time, athletes may undergo classification changes.
The key is to adapt to the evolving nature of their conditions. But this requires time and preparation, which requires money. If you don't have good conditions, you always need luck to have good para-athletes. But if family can help at the beginning, why do high-performance athletes like Olivia do what they do despite the challenges? Well, it turns out they're mostly in it for the love of their sport. Enjoyment, the pursuit of excellence and personal fulfillment top the list. Not many are aiming for a pro sports career, only about 18% of Paralympians. And here's the cool part. They're really satisfied with their sports journey. Paralympic athletes place a strong emphasis on personal development as a primary motivator. Additionally, national pride is particularly noteworthy among Paralympic athletes, reflecting a deep sense of commitment and passion for representing their country on the international stage.
So, to our listeners, next time you're watching Paralympic sports, remember the method behind the magic. Classifications ensure that every athlete, regardless of their background or ability, gets a fair shot at the podium. That's a wrap for today's episode. Stay tuned for more insights into the fascinating world of Paralympics. Until next time, this is Thiago.
And this is Eva. Diverse Dreams series was produced with the support of Met Radio 1280 AM and CKUW 95.9 FM. Scripting, hosting, and production by Thiago Cordeiro and Eva Maia Miranda. Edition, Ugona Shikbo.
This podcast series used material from the Canadian Paralympic Committee. Music, Ages Ago by Brock.
You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
Take me on a holiday. I could use a getaway. Somewhere on the edge of the world. I never had a rat in the race, but sometimes I just can't take this rush and all the noise. Picture where you wanna be. Maybe you could come with me. Lose your worries out in the sun. Get a piece of the pie. I'm loosening my clip-on tie. There's blue skies overhead. Take me on a holiday. Find some place to hide away. We'll be right back.
Someone better ring that bell. I hear the sirens call. Take me on a holiday. Find some place to hide away. Take me on a holiday. Find some place we'll run away.
The West End Research Center Stepping Stones to Work program is a free training program for job seekers on EIA with a criminal record. The Stepping Stones to Work program offers first aid, CPR training, safe food handling, workplace hazardous materials information system training, as well as employment readiness workshops. Training is offered year-round. For more information and to find out if you are eligible, please phone 204-202-6932, extension 106. That's 204-202-6932, extension 106. The West End Resource Center is located at 832 Ellis Avenue at Arlington.
Testing.
Every Tuesday night, unfold the sonic blanket and wrap yourself in the sounds of punk, indie rock, electronic, and much more from near and far. We get cozy every Tuesday night from 6 to 7 on CKUW 95.9 FM.
David Barsamian, host and director of Alternative Radio. Alternative Radio can be heard on CKUW 95.9 FM, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Alternative Radio is committed to the principles of public broadcasting, offering a forum for voices and views often unheard in mainstream media. Like CKUW, Alternative Radio is supported by listeners just like you. Go to alternativeradio.org to find out more about our programming, audio, and transcripts. Thank you very much.
Homelessness is a lot like musical chairs. Except not with chairs.
When the music stops, more than a quarter of a million Canadians, many of them children, don't have a home.
But if we act right now with urgency, we can fix it.
Don't let homelessness assumptions get in the way of homelessness solutions. Go to CanadaCanDoIt.ca.
Help the Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness.
Thank you.
Located on the first floor of Portage Place Shopping Center, Studio 393 is a come-as-you-are drop-in studio space for people aged 13 to 29, run by Graffiti Art Programming. The program curriculum is shaped by participants focusing on music production, recording, DJing, creative writing, and podcasting. In addition to a highly qualified staff of practicing artists, Studio 393 also receives local, national, and international guest artists and professionals to facilitate workshops and mentor aspiring and emerging artists. We also offer personal and professional development opportunities. Studio 393 is now open 4 to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday and 1 to 3 p.m. on Saturdays. For more information, please contact info@graffitigallery.ca or go to www.graffitigallery.ca.
Tune into On My Way Home, broadcast on CKUW 95.9 FM on Tuesdays from 8 to 9 p.m. Hosted by your host with the most, Justin Fuhr, On My Way Home is a show exploring music, lyrics, and literature. You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll keep me in your heart for a while. On My Way Home, it's a drive-home show for when you're already home. Tuesdays from 8 to 9 p.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM in one great city of Winnipeg, Manitoba.